What is up, everyone? My name is Matt Binder, and welcome to the very first episode of Doomed.
Doomed!
Here on Doomed, we're gonna have some fun. While talking about terrible, horrible shit like the current state of politics, culture, and more. You may already know me from the Majority Report with Sam Cedar, or maybe you're familiar with my work at Cafe, or maybe you follow me on Twitter. Maybe you have no clue who I am at all, which is actually the most probable scenario. But now, hopefully, you'll know me from my brand new show, Doomed. So, let's get right to it. To kick things off, I wanted to take a look back at the year that was 2017. And to do that, I asked this person to be Doomed's very first guest. Now, we recorded this just a little before the new year, but everything is still very relevant. So, without any further ado, here we go. Let's get right to it.
What a rush.
Joining me now from the Huffington Post is Ariana Huffington. Ashley Feinberg.
Hello,
Ashley. How are you?
Great. I'm doing great.
And you are a senior reporter there at the Huffington Post, right?
That is correct.
All right, cool. I asked you that right before we went on, and I still had to ask you when I was recording. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I wanted to have you on because you have been easily one of my favorite writers this year. And I think that you have pretty much hit upon everything that would make me want to have you on to talk about what happened in 2017. And I thought we'd start with basically, just in general, the guy who runs the country, Donald Trump.
I don't know that Donald Trump's the one who runs the country, but the figurehead at least.
Yeah. He's there. He's just there. He just sits in the White House and he's there. So, been a great year, right? I mean, he's been a great president.
Yeah, I mean, everyone said 2017 was going to be better, and you know what? They were right. It was.
It was fantastic, and I'm sad to be leaving, but I only assume 2018 could be even better.
And, I mean, why stop there? Why not 2022? Until then, we've got a smooth sailing, I figure.
Yeah, I think we're good till then. I think everything's great. I not to jump too far, but just to move back from 2020, yeah. We got to make sure that this guy's president again.
Yes. Well, I mean, we'll see.
Yep, we will see. Here's hoping that we get Hillary Clinton to run again, and then we could just redo 2016 all over again.
Or there's a meteor coming, which is really the best of both worlds.
I agree. So, Donald Trump. So this guy gets inaugurated. He officially becomes president on January 20th. And from there, we've done some great stuff in this country. America's now great. America's now great.
Again.
When was the last time do you think America was great in Donald Trump's world?
I think the last time America was great in Donald Trump's world is, during the 80s when he was an ostensible real estate tycoon. We were essentially having on the verge of a race war, which is an ideal scenario. And people still vaguely respected him. He didn't become as much of a joke as he is now, though. Obviously, he was still a buffoon.
Yeah, but even then, though, I feel like, you know, The Apprentice really made him who he is today. So I feel like pre-apprentice world, I don't know if he would want to go back to then. Maybe Make America Great Again is like when Apprentice had its best ratings or something.
Yeah, I mean, the first season of The Apprentice was maybe his peak.
Yeah. And it's been all downhill from there.
Until now,
yes.
Yes.
Let me pull up something here because Donald Trump is probably – aside being president of the United States, is probably most well-known. And aside from being a real estate person and a reality TV guy, probably, after those three things, is most well-known for his Twitter account.
Yeah.
And he says some great things on Twitter. Definitely doesn't attack anyone. Definitely doesn't single out anyone with his millions and millions of followers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely not a racist on there.
Or in general.
That's true, too. But one of your pieces this year that I wanted to talk about was your piece about why Twitter won't ban Donald Trump. Because he clearly runs afoul of Twitter's rules, which are always changing now because apparently people don't want Nazis on the social networking site they use, which is surprising to me, as I'm sure it's surprising to you.
Everyone but Jack, really. But the thing is, I understand to a degree why they haven't banned Trump. Like, it would be a nightmare for them. It would be impossible for them to handle because, for whatever reason, conservatives still manage to bind together more and create more of an uproar than liberals ever have. And but even with like someone like Cernovich, like, I feel like the fall from that would not be as bad as what's happening now. And that's the thing I can't really understand.
I too see why they wouldn't ban Trump. I mean, you got the president of the United States using your platform, no matter how much of an asshole he is. I can see how that's the appeal. But it is weird to me that how they skirt around this issue.
Yeah, I mean, they pretend that their rules matter and that there's any logic to them when I feel fully confident, and this is a complete guess, but that the only real factor going into this is this going to be more or less of a PR nightmare if we don't do it?
The logic behind banning, let's say they banned Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Everyone would talk about it for a while, I'm sure. But then as soon as, you know, our attention spans and just the next big story came by, you know, people would forget.
I don't know about Donald Trump because, he would not forget. And also, I can't even imagine what he would do. It's like Twitter is his absolute favorite thing in the world besides like white supremacy, but like he needs it to like get around. And he says this constantly, like, my social media following lets me get around the media. Even Facebook is not the same to him because he can't see really how people just like fawn over his tweets instantly in the same way. I think if they banned him from Twitter, he would lose it more than he already has.
Yeah, I mean, but this is what I probably would have agreed. But then I've been really thinking about it recently in terms of like just like all these different, because Twitter recently changed their rules once again to make it more clear that they will ban certain people spewing certain things on their platform, and they'll even watch what they do off Twitter, right, and take that into consideration when choosing whether or not to ban them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinking of Milo specifically. Right. Milo Yiannopoulos, he, while he still obviously gets his little press hits every now and then, he has been lacking in the conversation ever since he got banned from Twitter. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the media lives on Twitter. Like, Milo has like what? Probably like a million likes on his Facebook page at least.
Yeah.
And he's constantly putting stuff out there, and it doesn't get picked up as much as his shit got picked up when it was on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, and like, maybe Trump would go over to Gab, but that's never going to be the same as what this is.
That would be something that I would like to see.
I would love to see Trump on Gab.
Trump on Gab. And you know what? He would definitely say, like, go to gab.com when it's not their website.
Yeah, well, I mean, that should be incentive enough, really, for Jack.
It's so, you know, speaking of Jack specifically, you know, I don't usually judge people by who they follow on Twitter, but with Jack specifically, like, what is his reasoning for following someone like Mike Cernovich? I don't get it.
That's a great question. I have thought about this a lot. Like, part of me, when it first happened, I was like, oh, he's following him to keep an eye on him, but that's clearly not what's happening because Cernovich constantly like rouses up like mobs to go after random people that he decides to accuse of being pedophiles or what have you. And Jack's never done a single thing about it. He actually followed me, so I've been DMing him like once a week with Cernovich's tweets. I never get a response, but I'm surprised he has not blocked me yet.
Yeah, and he still follows you. That's great.
Yeah, which, I mean, maybe he just likes the abuse. I don't know going on with him, but something.
I mean, he must just be a big fan of causing shit on his platform that basically gives him lots of money.
Yeah, I mean, my ideal scenario is that it turns out that Jack is a closet white supremacist or something, just to like make it make more sense, because like I don't know, right now, the idea that he's just letting all this happen because it's easier almost feels worse.
Yeah, I mean, I follow shitty people on Twitter, mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, I want to see what they, when Cernovich, I don't follow Cernovich specifically, but like when Donald Trump says something, I want it popping up right away so I could see it and and laugh at it with the rest of the world. But, you know, Jack doesn't seem like the type who's seeing a Cernovich tweet and giving it the old screenshot and then pointing and laughing at it in a tweet.
Oh, of course not. I mean, that, God. Yeah, I wonder how much of his replies he actually reads, because I know that he's, like, people who have been the target of harassment campaigns on Twitter have been contacted by Jack before for him to kind of try to smooth things over and ask them, like, what he can do. And if it's all just completely for show, like, nothing ever comes of it.
It's specifically a Twitter problem, too, just because of how that site works. It's so easy to dogpile on people on Twitter, and it's so public in terms of, like, you know, on Facebook, there's public Facebook pages, but, you know, you don't usually see the back and forths and the targeting of people on Facebook, just because of how, not saying it's something Facebook did to, like, they're great at stopping harassment. It's just like how their network was built. It's like, you know, either A, like, there's so many comments on a Facebook thing that no one pays attention to anything anyone says, or B, like, it's this closed network where basically, like, you would comment on something someone says, but only whoever really they follow, follows them gets to see it. It's not like Twitter. I could share anyone's tweet anywhere, and they could just, whether they have a Twitter account or not, take a look at it.
Yeah, and there's more coming at you constantly. Like, it's just, you see everything all the time, which is completely terrifying and horrible. And I think part of the reason why it's works so well.
And it's why Trump loves it. It's got to be. He's got to see those replies.
He opens his, like, at mentions, and he just sees, like, 1 million like MAGA mom accounts screaming about how much they love him, and of course he's, like, gonna fawn over it.
And not even just that, though. I think he gets some sort of. I really think he likes those people who, like, and this is another article you wrote that I wanted to get to. So this is the perfect segue, actually. the type of people who respond to Trump's tweets.
Yes.
And it's amazing. It's become its own little world. You could probably, if this wasn't happening on Twitter, a place where it's already a social network, you could probably make, like, a respond to Trump social network, and all these people would go there and just respond to Trump all day.
It's wild. I mean, and the one thing is, it used to be a lot of bots that would just be auto-replying with, like, photos. And then for a while, it was the people selling, like, liberal tears mugs. And there's our cycles, because, like, Twitter seems to pick up on, like, which types are responding and gets rid of them. So you keep seeing, like, a new crop of whoever, like, popping up. Like, right now, it's a lot of people who clearly have notifications for Trump turned on their phone. It's a lot of journalists being like, excuse me, like, how can you, like, say this in America, sir? And it's wild.
Have you no decency, sir?
He doesn't. Does he is the question. They're going to figure it out one day.
Yeah, one day. Maybe it correlates with the amount of threads in a single tweet they have going on.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case people don't really know, basically, on a Trump tweet, when he tweets, there are people, and this has changed throughout the year, there are specific types of people who respond to Trump. And like you said, there were, like, you know, the bots that were basically like the Pepe train, and they tweeted like a weird meme of, like, someone drew Pepe the Frog, like, driving a train running over Democrats or something, and it's like, all aboard the Trump train. And let me tell you, that's quite the locomotive that could run over that many people. I mean, it's.
I mean, they have some of the best infrastructure. It's been infrastructure week for a year. No wonder we have strong train tracks.
I mean, like, if a single twig drops on like the 7 train line here, because it's the outdoor, it's one of the outdoor subways in New York. 7 train isn't running for a couple of hours now, but apparently, in MAGA world, you can run over multiple people, and it's actually not something that you would even stop for. Like, the train can not only do that,
I mean, yeah, just go right over them in Trump's America.
Yeah, it's maybe it is in America.
It's why we're great again.
Yes. So then when you get past those people, yeah, you had the liberal tier mug sellers, which, I mean, mm-hmm. what more do you say about that? There's people who sell.
Good for them. I wish I had thought of it.
Yeah. But imagine, though, that that's your, like, that's your, like you put that as your job. Like, when you have to, like, file paperwork to get, like, tell people your employment when you're, like, getting a credit card or, like, buying a house.
A professional Zappos creator.
Yeah. I sell mugs on, in the replies to Trump's Twitter account.
CafePress.com.
Yes. So those people are those people. I don't know whether to talk about how sad they are or to applaud them. So we'll just leave them as they are. but then you have, as I think you called them in your article, the first responders. Mm-hmm. And those are the people who do the sir, excuse me, sir.
Those are my favorite ones, yes.
Yeah, and it's you can, I mean, it's the same people now. Like, it's so many of the same people. There's the Vice guy, or the guy who says in his Twitter bio that he sometimes works for Vice with that weird, with the old-timey mustache.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of these people, they're also the ones who take a lot of pride in putting, like, hashtag blocked by Trump in their bios, which is another thing that is incredible, just because it, I think they envision it as, like, this big, like, they actually, like, accomplished something. They, like, made him mad, and, like, they're making a difference, and it's just my, I love it so much.
It's, the whole idea of being proud of getting blocked by Trump, it's like, dude, he just, like, ended your gravy train. Like, that's what you were known for.
Well, they figured out a workaround, I found, because a lot of people who were blocked by him, I think, figured out that if they go into an incognito window and copy the link and paste it in their tweets, they won't be able to see it, but other people will. And so they're still, getting it in there somehow.
Really? Because, I mean, I know that when someone blocks you, you could check out the tweet that you can't see when you're logged into your account by opening it in an incognito window. But I did not know that you can log it. Wouldn't logging into your account then, though, block the tweet?
Well, I'm not entirely sure how they're doing it. I think what they're doing is pasting the tweets in, so the link is in there, so, like, they can't see it, but other people can.
Hmm. I'm going to have to try that. That's interesting. Yeah. So, who else has been? Oh, there's another person. There's this one guy who's, like, really proud to be, like, a Peter Thiel, like, fellow or something. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know, but he sounds great already.
I mean, he's super anti-Trump, and he's mm-hmm. always one of these guys who's replying to his Twitter account. But in his bio, he's very proud. Peter Thiel Foundation, whatever the hell he has, he's a fellow. And people have pointed out to him, like, don't you realize there's some sort of, you can't do that. Like, you can't.
Well, weren't the Peter Thiel fellows the ones who he paid not to go to college?
Yes, that's this guy. He's one of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing great things already, apparently.
I mean, my question is, how did this guy become so anti-Trump without being indoctrinated by his liberal professor? Which he does not have, because he doesn't go to college.
That is they're starting in high schools now, apparently.
According to conservatives, I mean.
And Don Jr.
Now, if conservatives really need to pay attention to this podcast then, because they fight so hard against liberal colleges and mm-hmm. college students being indoctrinated, that if they're not paying attention, and high schools are now doing this, and junior high schools are now doing this, mm-hmm. then kids might still become liberal. Because Just cut off their ability to go to college, and everyone's a conservative. That's just how it works.
Ideally, but I mean, that's why you have to homeschool. You have to make sure to keep them separated from other kids for the rest of their lives. Like, that's the real way to breed someone who's ready to fight for the cause.
I mean, I guess that's the best way. You know, continuing on with the let's go past the Sir Decency.
Yes.
Have you no decency, people? Actually, I really don't know if I want to do that because there's still so many to talk about, but we can move on. Yeah, we didn't even talk about Eric Garland. I mean, is Eric Garland even one of those people, or is he just a weird thread guy?
I haven't seen him respond to Trump. I can't imagine he hasn't, but I haven't even seen some of his threads recently, I don't think.
Yeah, maybe he's gone past that now.
I don't know what his real job is, but...
You can't talk about Russia collusion all day if you got to spend time also thinking of witty things to say to Trump.
Exactly.
There's also people who screenshot Trump and mm-hmm. all sorts of weirdos. And then there's the pundits. Like, right. Like, you know, can we talk about woke Bill Kristol for a minute, because I feel like his change in 2017 has been so amazing. And I'm not saying this to applaud him. I'm not saying this as you should go follow Bill Kristol now. But I'm just saying, like, it is amazing what Trump has done to people who are absolutely terrible, still are terrible,
yes,
but are putting on a show.
Well, yeah, I mean, the most amazing thing to me is sort of the, I mean, we suffer entirely from amnesia because George Bush now is a resistance fighter, apparently. And it's just wild, like, the sort of willingness we have to completely embrace awful people just because they don't like Trump or Trump doesn't like them.
You know, the whole idea, I just saw the new Star Wars movie, and the whole idea of, like, George Bush being a resistance fighter has placed the image of, like, him wearing, like, the X-Wing, like, rebel fighter gear, like, inside the plane. Like, it's, I don't know why it's done that just now, but that is, he actually looks quite fascinating in that gear in my head. But, yeah, so Trump on Twitter has been such a big thing in 2017. I mean, he's always been great on Twitter, but what's amazing is people who support him, actually, are really not sure how they feel about him on Twitter, as if that's, like, the main problem. But it is still stunning to see that there are, like, MAGA people who defend everything Trump does, but when you ask them about Twitter, that's where they'll sometimes draw the line. Like, in those CNN panels where they talk to people who voted for Trump and ask them how they feel about Trump this far, like, when they talk about them 6 months in, they talk about them, like, 9 months in. It's like, what did you think about Trump so far? Oh, I really liked, you know, the racism stuff and the sexism stuff. But, you know, he should get off Twitter.
No, what's interesting is, like, that actually is my mother. She voted for Trump. She loves that the economy is doing great. Her one criticism that I can get her to admit to is that she wishes he would tweet less. That is it.
Now, was she always a conservative?
I think she would call herself an independent. She was definitely more liberal before. I think when she married my stepfather, who is, like, a Fox News diehard, is when things started really going downhill. Yeah, it's wild.
Talk about college indoctrination, that old marriage indoctrination.
Yeah, it fixes the college thing right up.
Yeah. So that's there's your answer for conservatives. Marry liberals. And then just, there you go. There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just trying to get conservatives, and not even just conservatives, weirdos like Jonathan Chait, who care so much about college. And now, in 2017, if you're still talking about liberal professors in college and college student activists trying to stop right-wingers and literal racists and neo-Nazis from talking on their campuses, I mean, then where are you in the world? Like, what have you been paying attention to?
Well, Jonathan Chait's biggest fear just seems to be having to redefine himself as anything other than a liberal. And if he can identify all these socialists and college kids as something else, then he can keep who he believes he is, I think.
Like, that is who he is. That's totally. Yeah. How can he not? Like, how do you look in the mirror after you write an article about liberals in colleges in 2017 and not think, like, like, what am I doing? Like, what is wrong with me?
You be Jonathan Chait. It's clearly very easy for him.
Yes. But let me think here. Give me one second. Yeah, I'm trying to. There's something here to say about this, because it is baffling to me. College students have always partaken in this sort of student activism.
Oh, yeah.
There's always been this whole, you know, the whole idea of protesting speakers on campus, the whole idea of even the whole safe space idea that people are all of a sudden in the past few years have been obsessing over. This has been around for decades.
Yeah, I mean, nothing about what's happening is new. There's nothing nefarious or particularly, like, different about all this. Difference is that for some godforsaken reason, Democrats think that if we can somehow be more centrist or more accepting of conservative values, and by conservative values I mean, like, Lucian, whatever his name is, talking on campus about the gateway pundit, then,
oh, yeah,
then suddenly we'll start winning elections, which is absurd and insane, and it's amazing.
See, I don't get how you're an adult human being who is not Okay, if you're like, you know, an adult who went back to college, or you're a graduate student or whatever, fine. But how you are like in your 40s, you have a job, you graduated from college long ago, why the fuck you care about what's going on college campuses? I mean, like, why the hell do you care? Like, what is wrong with you?
Like, yeah, I mean, I think the only thing I can think of is that it's so much easier to deal, to like think about that and deal with that than like the fucking mess that exists everywhere else.
That's got to be it. But then there are people like Jonathan Chait who are like, there's no way that's his mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not going at it because of that. It's not like poor Jonathan Chait sitting behind his computer and he's going, oh, the world we live in now, I must escape and talk about, like, I can't picture that.
Not so seen? Yeah.
You know, I just felt like, you know, in 2017, in this year that we just passed, that's just passed us by, to be talking about that and being someone who's long out of college, you have a, there's literally no, you're not a teacher at college, you're not a dean, mm-hmm. you're not, you have nothing to do with college. Like, especially if you went to college at some point, so you know this fucking stuff existed when you were in college.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, I think those people should be hit by that Trump train that can just keep throwing people down. Nothing gets caught up in the tracks, nothing gets caught up in the wheels, everything's mm-hmm. good to go, and it just can straight shot run over all these people.
Yeah. I mean, they're just following conservative talking points. They're walking into these manufactured outrages that they are creating because they are now the ruling party, and they need an enemy. And if they can't have Hillary Clinton, which they still do anyway, then college campuses are the next one, and they need something to fight against. And so Jonathan Chait accepts that and goes with it.
Let's move on to, okay, this was, to me, this was incredible. When you did this, Comey has been so huge in 2017. I mean, he inserted himself into the 2016 election without a doubt. Listen, I'm no Hillary stan. I'm not sitting here going, mm-hmm. you know, yes, queen to Hillary Clinton. I was a Bernie bro, and I voted for her in the general because, I mean, I'm not a crazy really? Person who thinks that, you know, uh-huh. voting for Jill Stein would have meant something. again, just to bring up Jill Stein, because she's been inserted into 2017 with this whole Russia investigation too. Listen, like, I always felt this way about third parties. Like, if being that I'm in a blue state and I don't support who the Democrats usually put forward, if there's a third party person who can make the case that, you know, they're not going to win, obviously, but by voting right. for them will help build up a strong third party. Like, they just need to hit a certain percentage in the election, and then from there, this party will, there'll be an infrastructure built, they'll start focusing on local state mm-hmm. you know, and then from there just take it from there. I'm all on board. I would vote third party easily. I think Nader probably got pretty close to convincing people that that's something that could be possible. But with Jill Stein, I mean, she should be allowed to run, of course, but I mean, there was never a point where I thought that, like, I'm gonna vote Jill Stein. Like, it just, I don't, and now that she's back, and let's bring up this whole Russia thing. So, damn, this is so much. Just by bringing up, I wanted to talk about you unveiling Comey on Twitter, but we'll get to that. So this whole Russia investigation came out of, you know, people think that Trump is the president because mm-hmm. apparently Russia stole the election, mm-hmm. which is, you know, is there some sort of collusion in terms of, like, Russia had a favorite and wanted to help Trump? Yes. Mm-hmm. But to me, when it comes down to it, I mean, unless there is proof that is somehow unveiled at some point that votes were changed by Russia via hacking right. or whatever, then people who were legally allowed to vote and cast their vote, however, voted mm-hmm. for Donald Trump. And because of how the Electoral College works, those votes were tallied in such a way that gave certain states to Donald Trump. And he won legitimately. No matter what Russia did to advertise bullshit stories, no matter how much fake news they poured down people's throats, when it comes down to it, he won legitimately.
Of course,
yeah. That stuff is not, like, that stuff is problematic. That stuff is obviously, we don't want people to be fed false information and base their choices on who to vote for on something like that. But that's just how it is. People who are in campaigns have been doing that forever. This is a big deal only because it was a foreign country who was apparently feeding this false information. But still, when it comes down to it, the ultimate thing that got Trump into the presidency is that the people voted for him in the states that he needed to win, and he won those states.
Right. Yeah. I mean, of course. But the most incredible thing about it is that, I mean, I do not believe that Trump actively thought he was colluding with Russia, or if maybe he was aware Russia was helping him and didn't really care just because he's worked with the mafia his entire life and it's just whatever. But the most incredible thing about this is that now that this is all, they fired Comey and this is all happening, like, there's so many other crimes that are going to be, like, actual crimes that will be uncovered in the process of doing this investigation, which is, it's the worst written movie ever. It's incredible.
It's, I was just talking to someone earlier about how, you know, if you had someone write this, mm-hmm. they could not come up with these characters. They could not come up with
I mean, this script. It'd be too on the nose. It'd be too, like, of course that's never going to happen. Like, and the fact that Paul Manafort is just going down for random money laundering he was doing completely unrelated, and Kushner is now getting his businesses looked at. Like, I really believe they did not think they were going to win, that they could run this campaign even though they had these wild crimes in their past and in their present, and the fact that they did win is what completely fucked them over.
You know, it's something that I think people are putting all their faith, and by people I mean, like, you know, the everyday resistance liberal, is really putting their faith in somehow Trump going down, and I think there's little to no chance that Donald Trump doesn't serve all 4 years of his presidency.
And I don't even know that would be better. Like, President Mike Pence scares me, I think, more than Donald Trump does.
I absolutely agree, and I feel like I'm screaming at a wall when I try to, like, explain this to certain people who just don't see it, because, you know, they hate Donald Trump so much and they let that blind them. I mean, and Pence is a scary guy because
he actually knows how to accomplish things.
Yes. And there's no sort of, like, I think people need to be really people need to really understand this. Obamacare in 2017 was saved because Collins and Murkowski felt that their state would be hurt by that, and then that would negatively affect them electorally.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't enough to save it. John McCain was the deciding vote that saved Obamacare in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because he was a resistance leader like people wanted to portray him as. Not because he's some sort of principled politician who cares about things going how they're supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to give a fuck you to Donald Trump.
Yes.
It was that whole image of him dramatically walking up with his hand raised and putting his thumb down after like a couple of beats. Like, it was so unbelievably corny, but effective in fooling the right people.
Oh yeah, of course. And it was so frustrating to watch because everyone who beforehand had been lionizing him and fetishizing John McCain felt so validated, which was like, it was like the worst feeling.
Now you had an interesting run-in with again, run-in as in the world of Twitter, run-in.
Uh-huh. Although
it is the only world, yes.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure it would have been a much more interesting story if there was a in real life run-in. You had a run-in with John McCain's daughter after you said something on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I can't remember entirely. I think it said something along the lines of congratulations to John McCain's wife and children for their upcoming tax-free inheritance, which there's two things I regret about that. The first one is that I deleted it, which was the biggest mistake you could possibly do in that situation, and I don't know what I was thinking. The second thing is that it was not entirely factually accurate because a lot of it's in Cindy McCain's name, and there's some weird math that has to go on. So I regret that it was factually inaccurate. Otherwise, I'm fine with it.
I mean, you should be fine with it because
you weren't
saying that. I mean, and again, I wouldn't care because I think it's absolutely right no matter how you put it, what you said. But it's not like you even said in the tweet, like, specifically, you hope he dies of the cancer currently in his brain.
Well, what's funny is when I did it, I forgot that he had been diagnosed with brain cancer again, and I was just thinking that he is 1,000 years old and he's about to die.
Yeah.
And then I was like, why is everyone getting so mad? And then I was like, oh, I remember now.
Like, everybody dies.
Yeah.
Like, he eventually will die and leave his inheritance to his child. Yes, as everybody will.
Yeah, which is, what's insane is, like, I don't know if it's just because it happened to me recently, but I feel like there's been so many tweets now of people referencing the fact that death is an inevitability, even in regards to politicians, and then people losing it over that, which is wild to me.
It's going back to this whole, like, decency thing that people think
mm-hmm.
has been lost in 2017. Trump came in, and the way he talks and the way he acts has destroyed this whole, mirror that people have been looking into and seeing, and he shattered that. And I think the weird thing is, like, I think, like, if there's anything, Donald Trump's a terrible person, he's horrible, I dislike him very much, I hate him, but if there's one good thing that comes from this, if we have to live through it, it's that this whole decency bullshit's been destroyed. It's never going back.
It's been destroyed, also just completely turned on its head, because at some point conservatives and alt-right Nazis figured out that you can use the left's own moral outrage against them to very, very successful effect. Like, they can send letters to MSNBC telling them that Sam Cedar is a rape enthusiast, and it works for a little bit until things come back around. But we live in a wholly insincere world now, entirely in bad faith.
It's even gone to the politicians too. In terms, Senator Collins,
yes,
recently when she was being she'll say she was hounded by reporters or something for, I don't know, being a politician who's one of the 100 senators who's about to vote mm-hmm. on this life-altering for many people tax plan that she voted for, that only focusing on her, which no one was only focusing on her, but right. there was additional scrutiny by her because of the things she said in terms of what needed to be done for her to be for it, and how those things weren't done, and how she then said she was for it anyway. That was the additional scrutiny she went under, something that she basically brought upon herself by saying the things she did.
Yes.
She said that the coverage of this, by her being such a focal point of it, was sexist.
That was my favorite moment of what I can remember, which is the past week maybe, but God, it was so good, and it was perfect. And it's, she's not, like, there's not even really an attempt to try to make a cogent argument anymore, because you don't need to. Everyone realizes now that there are no consequences for things with Trump as the example, that you can say anything and nothing's going to matter, and no one's really going to question you because they'll be talking about something else in 5 minutes.
I think the idea that this has been blown up is so good that people now can, I think for the most part, there are still my favorite people in the world, the whole resistance liberals, who still think that one good vote requires you to praise this politician. I'm under the belief that no politician should ever be praised.
Yes.
And if you absolutely must praise a politician, do it when they're out of office, it can no longer cause harm.
Yes.
The whole idea that we can now call people out for their bullshit and they can't hide behind the whole good day, sir. That whole idea of they're well mannered. They speak nice. They're respectful. You know, we're just having a disagreement, but at the end of the day, they're a good person. I'm so glad that that's, if not completely dead, it's on its last legs.
God, I hope so. It's wild, because with that, I mean, it's just also insane to me how more openly racist we can be. Like, I don't think there's necessarily more than there used to be. There's just less dog whistling and less kind of trying to hide behind euphemisms. And now Steve King can just explicitly tweet out that he wants to secure a future for the white race. And it's wild.
You know, that's another perfect segue to this next thing I want to talk about. And that is, you know, the rise, basically, of, I don't want to say the rise, because I think that's wrong, 'cause it's the unmasking, I think, is right. The best way to put it, of the alt-right and really what amounts to neo-Nazis and white supremacists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been, to me, probably one of the biggest non-policy type things we could talk about that really had its moment in 2017. It's been, oddly enough, definitely terrible, horrible. I hate that it's happening. But oddly enough, I also think it's, looking at the most optimistic way possible, it's a positive. And I've made this argument before, and I'm sure I'll make it again, that, you know, if Hillary Clinton could be president right now over Donald Trump, I would, if I could snap a finger and make it happen, I would make that happen. But if we have to have Donald Trump, then we should take whatever good stuff we can out of it. We should really squeeze it of any little morsel of optimism and positivity we can. And one is that whole decency thing's out the window, at least for the most part. Mm-hmm. And two is that eventually this moment with racists and neo-Nazis and white supremacists in this country was going to come.
Right.
All the neoliberal presidents, all the liberal presidents, even all like no matter what sort of Obama or Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton or whoever we could have, mm-hmm. whatever future sort of Democrat we had in the future, this would have eventually came to when whatever Republican became president.
Yes.
I think Donald Trump has made it easier for them to come out, but there would have been someone like that eventually.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, and they all say that they've been emboldened and they're glad they can finally speak out. And I mean, the great thing is that by doing that, they're identifying themselves and they're proving to whichever ones are still in the closet that this isn't actually still acceptable and you will still lose jobs. And it's, yeah.
I mean, I think a good thing about it has been that, you know, these guys are coming out mm-hmm. and they're saying these things. And I think there's a lot of, I especially see this on like YouTube, that there is this whole, and that's where a lot of these guys are going. I think a lot of people focus on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think, and Facebook. And I think actually a lot of these young people are getting turned on by like hard right and extremist right politics by a lot more YouTube people than they are on Twitter and everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Weave does YouTube videos all the time.
Yeah. And like there's people who claim they're not in this group, like Sargon of Akkad and Stefan Molyneux.
Oh, yeah.
Who all present themselves as classical liberals, which also means that they're fucking racist.
Yeah.
Or they portray themselves as libertarians, which also mm-hmm. means that they're fucking racists.
Also, they're asshole racists, but yeah.
Yeah, so all these people are being, I really do think, like, I think that's what we saw also, this is going back a few years now, with Gamergate. Mm-hmm. A lot of those kids came from YouTube. Like, they weren't radicalized from Twitter. A lot of those user accounts had, like, zero clout, zero followers, zero authority on Twitter. They were nobodies on Twitter. They just used it to harass people. But they were being radicalized by like their favorite video game live streamer, like PewDiePie.
Yeah.
So I think that this is actually like, if it had to happen, that this was a good moment, because I do think I have seen people who listen to a lot of these on the cusp guys like Stefan Molyneux, who still very much hide behind the fact that they fancy themselves an intellectual. And they're just saying things to spark conversation while using dog whistles that are really portraying what they believe.
Yeah, they're just asking questions. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this moment is unmasking these guys, and I think mm-hmm. it's gonna stop a lot of these like this next generation of kids who are getting into politics from falling for some of these guys' bullshit.
I mean, I hope so.
Yes, yes. And I think the next focus, actually, should, in terms of, like, focusing on a social network that needs to, like, really clean up the shit that they put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think that right-wingers actually should have some sort of, I'm not going to die on that hill if they get banned. I could care less about them.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, if they want to make stupid vlogs and videos and shit like that, then that's their right, fine, whatever. But there's definitely people who cross the line in terms of they're not just like, you know, they're not just talking about how they think the tax plan's a good thing. They're talking about something a little bit more maniacal and dangerous. But I wanted to talk about your most recent piece, mm-hmm. and that's where you uncovered the Daily Stormer playbook.
Right.
And for people who may be listening to this and don't know what the Daily Stormer is, it's like the premier straight-up Nazi, white supremacist. They're not hiding behind the alt-right tagline. They're full-on anti-Semitic, anti-immigrant, anti-black, anti-Latino, anti-everything except European white men.
Mm.
And so you, in this piece for Huffington Post, found basically what amounts to their guidelines for writing for the site. But in it, the guy who runs the Daily Stormer, what's his name, like England or something like that?
Yeah, Andrew England.
He puts in not just like, you know, your basic guidelines in terms of, he's not, we're not going to talk about how white supremacists also use the AP style book.
And he does care very deeply about correct link usage and Oxford commas, which was encouraging to see, I guess, to some degree, but yeah.
Even little grammar Nazis, you know?
Yeah.
So go into a little bit, though, of what he puts in there that's more than just grammatical errors and stylizing of making sure that this and that are capitalized and this mm-hmm. are put in italics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing that was most the most surprising and also, like, affirming thing to me was, I mean, you read these articles on the Daily Stormer and you see all these 4chan people and talking about how they want to gas the Jews, and then a minute later how, oh, they're just kidding and, like, don't take it so seriously. And you know that doing this desensitizes people, and you start to think maybe it has to be intentional, that they actually do have a plan and they're implementing these tools. And then you think about what you're saying and you're like, there's no way this is real and that this is actually happening, and I'm completely paranoid and I'm losing my mind. But you're not. Like, that is exactly what they're doing. They lay out step by step how they want to combine virulent racism and irony and memes and humor to recruit. Essentially, they are very explicit about it.
Let me go through some of these things. I have your piece right in front of me. This one was interesting to me. Obviously, because they're a white supremacist and openly anti-Semitic website, they allow racial slurs. But the thing that was interesting to me is that he's very aware of how it looks to, I guess they're going to call them the normies.
Mm-hmm.
So he really wants to make sure that you only use them when they're absolutely necessary.
Right. Yeah. And it's also wild to me that he is so adamant about not using any racial slur that is poop related, which I, like, still don't entirely understand that one.
What is the thought? I don't get that one at all. Yeah.
I was Googling, like, Nazis averse to poop and, like, any combination I could think of, and there was nothing. So I think maybe either he just finds it personally. I have no idea. I can't figure it out.
You know, another thing that was interesting was, and this is actually something that I see. I mean, people always wonder, like, especially during, like, primary elections, especially this past in the 2016 primaries, I think people on the left and even liberal centrists and Democrats, mm-hmm. They're very aware of the different subgroups that are on their side. Mm. Like, they know that there's Democrats, there's people who just your everyday people who don't really pay attention to politics except for when mm-hmm. it's presidential elections. But then there's also the socially liberal mm-hmm. but maybe more economically conservative type of Democrat. There's the union guys who probably mm-hmm. are the reverse, where they're actually economically liberal but socially maybe yes. conservative. And then there's, you know, in then there's leftists, and even under that there's socialists
uh-huh.
and even communists and various degrees of liberals who and leftists and progressives and all sorts. Whereas
Jonathan Pate's nightmare.
Yes. And then at the same time they see on the right that there's also these different subgroups, where there's your run-of-the-mill conservative, and then there's the Wall Street type, and then there's, you know, the Midwestern mom. You know, and then there's even Republicans who are gay, and they're maybe socially liberal Republicans even, and and then there's far right people, and then there's straight up Nazis and white supremacists, and there's all sorts of different subgroups, and we can go through them all because we're aware that these groups exist within the basics of right and left. Now, conservatives, and I've noticed this a lot, don't see these subgroups. All people who are to the left of them are just liberals or progressives or whatever one word they want to use. It's different for all people. But they see no difference between a Hillary Clinton diehard and someone who's part of DSA.
Yes.
Say what you're going to say. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, yeah, it's insane to me because I'll get like Pepe Abbott tweeting at me about how I need to get over the fact that my girl didn't win, and it's wild that there's this assumption that there is no nuance on the left, and if you like go into 4chan and like read what they talk about how to infiltrate liberal websites and how to pretend to be one of them. And their impression of a liberal is a caricature of I'm with her person. And that's all they understand.
And the interesting thing there is, and I'm bringing this up because it comes up in the Daily Stormer playbook, although in a little bit of a different way, I always thought it was just stupidity. Where they don't see the nuance because they just don't see it. Like, it's not, they don't, their brains aren't wired that way, or they just don't understand that it's not just an us versus them type game for everybody. Like, it is for them, because that is what it is for a lot of them. Just a game they play that's two sides. There's no gray area. There's no sub factions. It all is just white versus black, red versus green, whatever. From reading various things, this isn't the first time with the Daily Stormer playbook, but it definitely comes up here. It's that it's also a strategy for some of these guys. It's actually a smart thing to do for some of these guys. Again, there are idiots who don't see these things. Mm. But as Anglin puts in his playbook, that no matter what a Daily Stormer writing hopeful writes about, whether they are talking about their hatred for immigrants, whether they talk about their hatred for Middle Eastern people, Muslims, Mexicans, black people, there always has to be at the end of this article where you attack whatever group you want to attack, there's always got to be this funnel that brings it all to the Jews.
Always. It's always the Jews, yes. And
No, go ahead, please.
No, yeah, which is like, I mean, it's I'm hesitant to say it, but it is brilliant in the sense that creating this clear singular enemy is the best way to create a cohesive mass of people who are going to be enraged and enlivened by this.
And it's something that I've really been like rethinking in terms of my thought process behind when I see a conservative say like to me, like, oh, go cry like you did on the night Hillary lost or whatever. And it's like, yes, the guy on Twitter who's saying that to me probably isn't smart enough to realize what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But the people who taught that person that or ingrained into them how to do that definitely had this clear strategy. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure other thinkers have thought this thing through. But the thinker that Anglin brings up in terms of where he got this strategy from is good old Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it's a clear line, I guess, between why he would go to Hitler for this advice. I mean, especially if your enemy is the Jews. I mean, right. I can't think of any other person you'd go to who would be better to talk about that one if your enemy is the Jewish people. But it's not just white supremacists and who think this way. And I do think that a lot of conservatives think this way because it's been ingrained into them now. And it's a bit of an eye-opening thing, actually, this year, that that it is a strategy that these people have been taught to just see one enemy.
Right. Yeah. Well, been so fascinating to me is that, for the past 8 years and also for the past, 50, really, Republicans are a reactionary party. And especially... now Donald Trump's whole thing during the election was that he's the underdog and the establishment is keeping him down and the establishment is the enemy. And I was fascinated to see like what would happen when he became the establishment, because a year ago when I was more of an idiot, I was like, oh, he's not going to be able to say that anymore. Like, what's he going to do? He's going to freak out. But of course he can still say that. It doesn't matter. And they will always create an enemy even when there is not one, as long as there's one clear thing they can point to as the cause of every problem.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I think to an extent, while Donald Trump still harps about the establishment, and the people around him do, because I guess that's their strategy. That's the word, the code word they want to use. His MAGA people have moved on from that. You barely see them talking about the establishment. I mean, the drain the swamp thing is been on has been slowly dying. Because I mean,
right?
Like the swamp, the metaphorical swamp that they made up. I mean, obviously, yes, there is an establishment and there is like this thing, I guess, if you wanted to call it the swamp or whatever. But my version of who those people are not the same as their version of who those people are. Mm-hmm. I mean, the MAGA people have moved on to just the one group they hate now is the libs. Got to own them. Got to own the libs.
Well, and I think the closest they have to Haley's establishment right now is Jared Kushner, because
who's Trump's son-in-law?
Yeah, and who's a Jew, and it can't be a coincidence that the one who keeps putting Trump into these terrible situations and is ruining his spectacular presidency.
It's got to be why. It can't be because he's incompetent, or it can't be because Donald Trump has given him the directive to do everything up into solving the crisis in the Middle East,
which he is fast on his way to doing.
Yes, we're almost there. I mean, it's MAGA. I mean, it's really stunning to watch him really get that done. But the obvious reason as to why this is happening is because Jared Kushner is Jewish.
Yes. And it's a globalist. We'll call him a globalist. But it's just amazing also to me how, because I always thought Jared was incompetent. I thought maybe he was smart enough to know that he was incompetent, but that's clearly not the case.
It's got to run in this family at this point that they have to do something so ridiculously, obviously corrupt that they end up going to jail. I mean, the Kushner family.
Dad's footsteps.
It's something that I look forward to seeing, but no, it's never going to happen. I mean, if there's one person who we were talking before, obviously, about how Trump's not going to jail. We're not going to see Trump behind bars.
Yeah.
But it's totally possible that something is unveiled that puts Kushner in that legal possibility.
God, I hope so badly.
But the problem is Trump will just like sign off on letting him free. He'll just pardon him. I don't see how he doesn't.
I know. And I mean,
everyone who go, that's the thing, this whole Mueller investigation, like, I don't see how it doesn't end in disappointment. I don't think it should not happen.
Right.
I think those, the right is crazy for thinking there's nothing there. And even the loony left, like the conspiracy theory leftists, who I don't even consider part of the left, like the H.R. Goodmans of the world, I think they're out of their mind if they think there's nothing here that's worth looking into. But, I mean, it's just going to end in disappointment, because there's going to be no way Donald Trump isn't the president anymore.
Right.
There's and anyone who goes under because of this is just going to be saved by Trump.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I've tried to like imagine every scenario I can where there's some reason he can't pardon him, but it's the only thing keeping me going.
The idea that Kushner will be in prison?
Just the imagining Jared Kushner either doing like a perp walk, or Don Jr. doing one, or either or both of them trying to throw each other under the bus simultaneously is the one joy I have left that is a completely imagined one.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I have thought of and imagined, and I see the visions of it in my head and my brain is concocted. But then I'm just brought back down to reality by the idea that it's just never.
Oh yeah. Nothing good is ever gonna happen for a while.
Well, I do think this is looking forward now, but I do think that we're looking towards a 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency after 2018 that he gets nothing done.
As opposed to the many, many things he has done now.
in terms of anything that Congress can stop. That's very true, though. Yeah. He's pretty much got nothing done, even with a completely Republican. But I think I do. I do see, actually, I think there's going to be a worrisome 2018 because they got this tax plan done. Mm-hmm. And I do think they're all feeling a little bit emboldened by it. And right. they're all now, I just feel it, that they're all going to be a little bit more willing to work with Trump now. Mm-hmm. And they've come to the realization, especially after this Alabama election, where Doug Jones won, they're all in the realization that who cares for some of them about electoral issues when it comes to how they vote, because they probably or very well may lose anyway. Mm-hmm. So they might as well make all their dreams come true, no matter what happens with their constituents, and just hope that their moneyed buddies who give them all their campaign financing bail them out in the end.
Yeah, I mean, they have nothing left to lose at this point. They're pretty much done trying to put on airs, I guess. And also the fact that Trump wants to go around the country in 2018 to campaign for these people is incredible and the greatest prank I have ever heard. And they might as well just take everything while they still can.
It's a win-win scenario for them. I mean, look at Paul Ryan. He's already floating the idea of being done.
Oh yeah,
he got what he wanted.
And he didn't want the job in the first place, really. And now he got to accomplish his childhood dream of devastating the poor even more. And he's done.
Now, we didn't talk. All right, one thing we have to cover, and then I think we've run the gamut of all the terrible things from Trump to the alt-right to Daily Stormer to Republicans and how the whole political mindset has changed in 2017. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to talk to you about how you this whole Comey Twitter thing.
Yeah.
So what was the process in unveiling Comey's secret Twitter account?
He was speaking to some intelligence dinner gathering, and he said sort of this offhand anecdote that he has an Instagram and Twitter account that he had to get recently to stay on top of whatever Trump's tweeting, essentially. And I mean, as soon as he said that, I was like, it can't be too hard to find, because he said that the only people who follow him are his family. So if I could just kind of find them and cross and eliminate who's not there and figure it out, which it was, it took a little more than that. I had to do a lot of online stalking of his elder son, who actually has a fairly large online presence as a basketball star. I learned a lot about him in those few hours. Eventually it just led me to him.
That's some real sleuthing there. who else could you unveil using? You know who I'm really waiting for someone to do a thing on? Mm-hmm. I want to hear about Mike Cernovich's previous marriage from his ex-wife. I'm dying to know like what this whole rape charge he got. I know that's with a separate person that accused him of rape. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, his marriage clearly didn't work out, and she was clearly ready to just be over with it, to the point that she had no problem giving him some sort of, she gives him apparently a lot of money every month just to basically be done with it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's insane that no one's found her yet, and also that no one's really, like, I'm very curious about his parents, very much so.
It's really weird how, like, I've researched this guy a lot to find out mm-hmm. more about him, and like his world, basically his public world basically begins with his law blog when he was a law blogger in like the early 2000s. Mm. And he ran this I think it's called like Crime and Federalism or something like that.
Sounds right.
Yeah. So he was like a very serious law blogger that was actually sourced by other very serious law bloggers for a point in time. Huh. And then you can see as the site goes on how all of a sudden he's really interested in like in like rape trials.
Huh.
And then he starts this, fast forward to like I think it's like what, like maybe like 2009 or 2008, maybe around that time, he starts this second blog Well, before that, he actually started a second site that was all about juicing. And then he comes up with this this site, Danger and Play, which was his like pickup artist blog.
Right.
And that's sort of where he started to build his infamy. And then Gamergate happened, and he used that as basically the pickup point to become the star that he is today. And then he rode the Trump train all the way to infamy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the first I was aware of him was Gamergate when he was trying to fight Sam Biddle. And, yeah, I mean, I wonder all the time if Gamergate had not happened like it had, would we still be where we are today?
It's incredible because I remember on the Majority Report in 2014 trying to constantly bring up this story whenever something big happened with it, whenever, like, there was some sort of major, like, harassment issue, or whenever there was the latest, when they would call, like, the FBI to, like, raid someone's home.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I remember I would try to bring this stuff up. And obviously they'd let me, like, you know, Sam and and Michael would let me bring it up. Mm-hmm. And but they would also, like, sort of just be like, this stuff is so silly. You don't care about this because you like video games or whatever, or you're, like, into that, like, culture or whatever. And I would, like, be like, listen, I'm constantly bringing it up because I'm seeing these right-wingers get into it. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing, like, what they see as the opportunity. Like, Milo Yiannopoulos doesn't fucking care about video games.
Right.
He's seeing a bunch of easily moldable minds. And they're really perceptive to this whole misogyny and this whole social justice warrior bullshit that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna ride these kids to the top. They're gonna build me up, and I'm gonna turn them into a bunch of conservatives while I'm at it.
Yeah, I mean, I was at Gizmodo at the time, and as it was happening, our sister site Kotaku was one of the main targets of how this all started.
And
I tried to write about it or get us to write about it, and the answer was always like, oh, if we just ignore this, it'll go away, which is how this all completely blew up, is that no one was willing to take it seriously.
I don't believe that, like I don't want to give these, like, 4chan guys the power that, like, they memed the Trump into the presidency, but like, I think he would have won regardless of this stuff.
Right. I mean, it was the testing ground. They figured out how to create a moral outrage and how to mobilize these people and create a sense that they were larger than they are. And it worked, and they applied it from then on.
Yes, it definitely like formed the at least online, the political dialogue and atmosphere and, let me use this word, the discourse. I mean, it's something that I think should have been looked into more by and taken more seriously by a lot of outlets. And I think you have a great point that, like, it's and we're still like you brought up before, the MSNBC thing with Sam. I mean, maybe, like, people in the media world have learned from it already, but it's clear that there are businesses, and with MSNBC, businesses in the media world who have not learned that they're being used in a way that's not exactly how they're viewing it. I'm trying to figure out how to put this.
No, yeah. I mean, like advertisers and, like, companies like that are the, like, perfect use case for this, because the one thing they care deeply about is not being involved in any sort of panic or outrage or controversy whatsoever. And if these, like, alt-right figures can manufacture this perception that there are thousands of people, like, furious at them, of course they're going to do the thing that seems like the easiest thing to do, which is to remove themselves from the situation, which is the worst possible case.
So, Ashley, I just wanted to – I agree completely. I just want to thank you for spending the time with me. We've talked for over an hour about 2017 and all the different things that we've learned from it.
I can't remember that much.
And, you know, but I mean, we did it. I think that the year sucked. Mm-hmm. I think the year was also a terrible foreshadowing for what 2018 holds. I don't think anything good is going to come from it. And that's completely true. I do think that we just need to get to November of 2018.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll have some good things.
Which is a big ask, but maybe.
But then even then, from what I've learned in 2017, a lot of Democrats haven't learned from 2017, and they might run terrible people in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, the DNC sure hasn't. Their marketing so far has been spectacularly bad.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll just live in a world that's run by Donald Trumps, and that mm-hmm. the resistance is just thousands of John Ossoffs who will continually be bland and boring. But they're mm-hmm. young, so that's all that matters to a lot of people. They're young, and they'll be bland and boring, and they'll go after Republican housewives, and they'll lose for all eternity.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, we made it this far. Might as well keep going.
That should be the tagline for the Trump years.
That's the DNC's motto for the next year is, we made it this far.
We might as well keep going.
Yes.
All right, Ashley. You can follow Ashley at Ashley Feinberg on Twitter. You can read her at the Huffington Post. And thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, Happy Holidays. Great. You too.
And that's that. There you have it. The very first episode of Doomed in the Bag. So maybe you noticed it's been a little while since I hosted a podcast. So thanks for putting up with any of my rustiness on my end. But the goal here is obviously to get better at it and to put out a new episode on the regular, most likely once a week. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Matt Binder. Definitely subscribe to this podcast. And catch you next time on Doomed.